Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, and welcome to The Backstory with Claire
and Susie. In each episode, we'll be hearing about an experience that has happened to someone that shaped who they are.
30 minutes that remind us that everyone's dealing with something. So we're a documentary podcast, a docupod.
Except you made that word up. Last week, we headed off on a warm summer's evening to Great Yarmouth. Yeah. And it's quite unusual, isn't it, for both of us to go out on an interview. But I'm so glad that I tagged along on this one, as really it was a pleasure to meet these two guys and to see firsthand the relationship between them.
Yeah, so we went to meet brothers Michael and Robert. Mm-hmm. Michael's now 33 and he was punched in the jaw 6 years ago down the seafront on a Saturday night, which sort of knocked him over and it smashed his head on the side of the curb. His brother Robert, who is 10 years younger than him, has been a huge part of his support in enabling him to basically learn how to live again with what turned out to be major brain damage. So here they are. So when you sort of cast your mind back, you know, this was obviously a big event in your life. But tell us about yourself before that.
Well, before it happened, I was quite a good lad. I was always out and having a laugh. I was also have a little kind of banter with my brother and stuff.
Right.
But I was always out, always doing everything. And everyone around Yarmouth liked me.
How would you describe your brother before this event?
Well, he was my role model growing up. I always looked up to him. Every younger brother wants to be like their older brother, didn't they? He was a bit of a lad. He was always getting the girls and had a big group of friends. You walk through town with him, everybody knew who he was. Like he said, he was a pretty good lad. Like, he wasn't no saint, but he wasn't a bad lad.
So tell me, like, you know, what you know and what you can recollect of the event.
Well, I can't actually remember the whole day it happened. And the only thing I can remember was in January when I fully started to wake up. That's the only time I can remember from.
Yeah. So perhaps, Robert, you can tell us about kind of, you know, how this came about, what happened to your brother?
Well, they went out on a night out, and from as far as I know, when they were walking back, he got assaulted because he has a metal plate in his leg. The impact of the punch forced him onto his bad leg, which then he had no balance on, so he fell over and hit his head on a curb, which pushed his skull into his brain and caused a major brain bleed. I think he died a few times in the ambulance on the way to the hospital. And then again from James Paget to Adam Brooks. They put him in an induced coma to stabilise him. Every time they woke him up, the pressure was too much in his brain.
And so what was the first thing that you heard about it?
I came home here and the police officer was here. And I thought it was for me originally. Because I used to be quite a naughty child. And I came in and then obviously they was talking. Dad took me to a side and he was like, look, your brother's been assaulted. He's been taken to James Paget. It's quite serious. We need to go. So I called my friend up and they sat with my friend all night. Didn't get any sleep. Just waiting to hear what happened. No one really told me what exactly happened for like the first day or so. And then obviously when they knew more, they then told me.
Wow. And so how long after that did you go and see him?
I didn't see him for I think it was about 2 weeks, I didn't go and see him because his state, they wasn't sure what was going to happen. They wasn't sure if he was going to even pull through it, or it was just so up and down. They couldn't tell what was going to happen. They couldn't stabilise him at first. So my mum and dad said it was best if I stay away for now until they got a grip on the situation and knew what they was going to do.
Did you want to go?
Yeah, I did, yeah. Oh, of course you do. It's your family. Like, you want to be by your family in their time of need, don't you?
Definitely.
I remember the first time walking into the room when he was still in a coma, I walked straight past him. I didn't recognise him. His tongue was enormous. It was swollen out of his face, out of his mouth. His face was all swollen and disproportioned. It was really strange. My sister had to pull me back and say, like, you've just walking past him. Like, I had no idea. I broke down. So.
And so how did that progress? Like, how long were you in hospital for?
I know I went in November, and I come out the end of January. But I was acting like a kid. I couldn't really talk, walk. I'd lost loads of weight, and it's made my whole family and my brother and all that struggle to try to help me.
Yeah, I bet.
When he woke up, like he said, he was literally like a baby. He couldn't communicate. I don't think he really knew what was going on. He was just kept pulling at his wires and trying to scratch himself. He had to have basically like cooking mittens on because he kept pulling at everything and scratching himself.
So taking me back to the time of the event, like what exactly happened and like why did it happen? Because it's a, you know, really shocking.
Not much is known about it, to be honest. The person who was responsible for it never really said why he did it. From what we could tell from looking at the videos and what the police could tell, like, it was, he saw an opportunity. He was with a load of friends. He saw an opportunity to make himself look good, and he literally, from the video, he was walking up behind my brother. My brother had his headphones in his hands in his pockets. He's sort of seen a shadow, and as he's turned round, he was met with a punch to the jaw.
Wow.
Which knocked him unstable, like I said, and he hit his head on the ground.
And so how long was he in the coma for?
Was it about 4 weeks? 4 weeks. It felt like longer than that to me, really, but yeah, 4 weeks.
Wow. And so then talk me through, because, like, do you remember anything of that time, or?
No, I don't remember anything till just around about the 16th of January. It's where my brain got damaged from short-term memory. All I remember is I woke up and I still thought it was November, but I had to try to speak because I couldn't speak. And it was a complete shock.
And you don't remember anything from when you were in the coma? Because I know, you know, people often say, I'll talk to them a lot because, you know, you might remember, they might remember it afterwards,
I don't remember anything from when I was in the coma. But I had like a little heartbeat, and every time, like, my mum was talking, it'd beat a little bit more. And then other people were talking, it'd beat a little bit more. But there was this nurse who would talk to me, and it would beep quite fast. So I don't actually know what the whole lot was.
So you were responding to something there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so when did you... So you talk me about your first memories when you came around.
My first memory is when all my mates were there. And I kind of woke up and I thought I was still at home. And I see all these tubes and everything. And I was like, where am I? And I went, I'm going for a fag. And they went, you've not had a fag for? And I went, no, it's still November. But I was trying to struggle to say it. But and I had a massive hole where my skull had been taken off. So that's, apart from that, every day just it started getting a little bit, the short-term memory started getting a little bit better, but not great. Kind of thing. If I was too tired, I'll forget everything within 30 seconds.
Yeah. So, like, how did your relationship change? Like, because obviously you'd looked up to him, but you sort of alluded to the fact that you're kind of both like a little bit lad sort of thing. Like, tell me about that.
It was very strange because I went from being a little brother to suddenly being the big brother in a sense. He was a child when he woke up. Even when he first came home, he was still a child. He's come so far in his progression. It was very strange. I had to move out when he came home because he was quite aggressive towards me when we first came home.
Oh, really?
That no one ever really said a reason for it, but if he had a headache or something, because it was magnified, the pain was so bad for him, he'd just snap at me and get up and go for me and throw things at me. So I moved out to try and make the situation easier, and that was kind of my time to stand up and grow up and do the right thing for Mike.
Right.
So we changed roles, basically. He was then the younger brother and I had to be the older brother.
That must have been really difficult, yeah.
It was a little bit tough, yeah. It definitely helped. It brought us closer as well, because he was able to have that time to himself. And then when I did see him, I'd come round for dinner every now and again and we'd have a laugh.
And so do you remember that time?
I remember little bits of that time, but not full. But what he was just saying, so like, I was the big brother and he was my little brother. And for what he done, I'm now still, even though I'm older than him, I'm still treating him as my older brother. So I'm growing up to be like him. It's that reversing around. So, and I think that the whole lot of it has brought the whole family closer together than what was ever was.
And so, like, what happened to the guy? Like, did he get done for this, or
he got in? He went to prison because he went to court, and I weren't allowed to go to court. I don't know how long he got, but he'd only served a bit of it, and then for some reason he then got kind of deported. He was not allowed back in the UK, and I don't know the whole reason why, but I don't even know his, I've only seen a picture of him, but I don't know his name or anything like that. But I get that kind of paranoid if I see someone that looks like him. I'm kind of looking behind my shoulder and like, oh, what's going on? It's the whole pressure.
It worries you.
Yeah.
Did you want to know about the person that assaulted Mike?
Yeah.
Because obviously Mike didn't know the answers to answer. Well, his name was Daniel Pozowski. He was a Polish kickboxer from Great Yarmouth. He had just finished his, I don't know what it's called when you come up, his license. He had just finished his license from a previous assault.
Oh, wow.
When he got taken to court, he got 3 years, do 16 months. And he was then released again on license. And I think a month or two into his license, he done something wrong, which then left him getting deported. Yeah.
So he has been deported to Poland?
He got deported, yeah, back to Poland. He was here on a student visa.
Right.
And he wasn't attending college or university or anything like that. I think it was just a means to stay over here.
Right.
But yeah, he had already been inside the system 3 times. And obviously, he then broke his parole.
Right.
And that they said that enough is enough.
Right. Do you, like, feel kind of furious at him for, like, the situation, or...?
In a way, I say I do, but in a good way, because I started thinking about, I'd actually want to making me the person I am now, I want to kind of shake his hand and go, thank you for making me the person I am now. It's weird to say, but it's taught me a lot more than what I used to know. I'm now putting everything for everyone rather than myself, and that's opened my eyes a lot.
So tell me how you've changed.
I've become more sort of like, if people have any problems, they talk to me and I can give them a little bit of advice in a good way and take it off their mind. Because if you're holding the stress, you get more stressed up and you take on people you don't, like I did. So it's, if you get it off your mind, it's easier to do little bits at a time. So that's why I always class things as little baby steps, each step at a time. Never rush straight into it.
Did you know anything about head injuries before this happened to you? Like,
no.
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 So, and all your family, presumably, like, Robert, had you known anything about, you know, how a head injury might impact you?
I didn't know what one punch could do to somebody. Like, that changed my eyes, that opened my eyes to everything, and what a difference just one punch could make to people's lives.
People do funny things when they're drinking, and that is what our class has. It was on a weekend, having a night out. Someone does something, you're in the wrong place, wrong time, and then you have to learn to kind of cope with it. On the weekends, I go around my mates, and we might pop into a pub, but we never go down the seafront, because it's that fear that I have, going, especially on nights and weekends, I won't.
So that's been right from the very beginning. You just
since then, that's one thing I won't. Sometimes mates go, "Oh, we'll go down the seafront." I say, "I go if you go down the seafront, I'm going to get a taxi home." They go, "Are you sure?" I said, "Yeah, I don't want to go into my. I class it as my danger zone. I don't want to go in a place where it happened before. I like to keep clear from all that."
Yeah. And have you ever had like sort of panic attacks or other kind of symptoms from this? Or
I've had a few panic attacks, and where I have seizures as well, and it's where I have too much stress. If I'm in a place I'm not comfortable with, say my safety bubble, panic attacks, seizures, because I'm not, my brain overdoes it.
So how has Michael changed? Like, what have you noticed? You
know? Yeah, excluding the first few months that he came home, he's so much more placid now. He's so much easier to approach. His whole demeanour is just so laid back. He's brilliant with money now. Before, he was awful with money, but he is so good with money now. It's strange, because it used to be me that kind of was saving for things, and now it's changed. I buy everything, and he's always, like, got all this money. He's got, his friends have changed. He's, I think, for the better as well. He's got much closer with his friends than he used to have. So many friends, and would pick and choose who'd go out with. And now he's got a really close knit group of friends. He's just so much more polite. He's just better in every single way. To be honest, it's hard to point things out when it's everything in general. He's just grown so much as a person.
It's amazing because it's quite unusual, isn't it? Because I don't know an awful lot about head injuries, but I always thought that generally people get more aggressive once they've had a head injury, because that can be some of the side effects, can't it? But you obviously haven't found that.
Well, I did when I come out of Addenbrooke's Hospital, because I was out more grit, because I was, what do I get, like, tired, like the fatigue. It would kind of come out and I would attack other people for it. But then with the help and having, like my brother said, moved out for that little while, I had my own feet, my own little space. That's what I kind of taught my own brain to have that little rest. So now when people eat, if I get fatigued, I still have a bit of a downer day. Everyone now knows just to walk away and leave me. I'll go into my room and I'll stand there. And people go, "Oh, was Michael in?" And they go, "Yeah, he's upstairs." And they go, "Oh, we ain't going to go up there," because they know I can.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
So I'd sit in my room for a couple of hours and come down, and I do a lot of walking as well to get rid of all that stress out of my head. So I'll just go walk around and come back and everything's fine.
So you found really good coping mechanisms sort of thing for how you feel. Yeah, that's interesting. And how has your mum coped with all of this?
I ripped her to pieces when it happened, like it would with any mother. And it was awful sitting here watching her just falling apart almost, because we didn't know what was going to happen. It was heartbreaking, and I would never wish that upon anybody, not even my worst enemy. That was probably one of the hardest things about it, was just seeing my mum crumble. But she kept it together for all of us, and she was the real, the rock, if you will, like that kept everybody together and kept everybody's hopes up, even though behind closed doors you could see what was happening.
Oh, that's amazing. And has she like played a big part in like Michael's recovery kind of thing?
Or? Oh yeah, she, to be honest, she's the only person that really knows how to handle him. When he's, like you said, when he has his down days, he can still be a little bit aggressive with certain things, of like getting his own way. She's the only person who really understands, like, and knows what to do, what to say. Because sometimes we do, like, if he's having a down day, we have to be careful what we say, and like, you are treading on eggshells a little bit. Whereas my mum can say anything, and it's fine because he knows that's mum. She just knows how to handle the situation very well. She takes it in her stride.
She's listens to everything I say. If I've got anything on my mind, I will talk to mum for it, and she will help me because it gets rid of that off my mind. I have a problem, I talk to my mum.
Do you have a job now? Or like...
I'm not allowed to work anymore because of my surgeon and everything from Addenbrookes, and where I've got brain damaged bits, I can't do multitasking, and I used to do this, like bar work and hotels, and now I can never do that. Like, I used to drive a mobile scooter and stuff, could never drive again. There's the amount of damage it's done.
Yeah. So, but you mentioned some volunteer work that you do, or?
Yeah, I do 3 days a week at Headway, do voluntary staff. And all I do is, when I go in there, is obviously you got staff there to give you like lessons to the groups of people. And I sit there and help them, and help the way that it helped me by not overdoing. Getting them into a certain slow routine. So it's, if they concentrate too much, they're putting too much stress on their brain. You have to have 5 minutes doing it and then a couple of minutes having a little break, just to have your brain just to relax a little bit. And that's why they're...
Is there sort of unexpected ways that like your brain injury becomes apparent?
But with that, you'd have to ask my brother and that, because they notice and where I don't.
Straight away his voice changed. Like, his voice is really completely different. Like, his voice is softer to what it used to be. His body language, his laugh was the main thing. His laugh is very different to what it used to be. It's just traits like that. His laugh, body, is the way he'd hold himself, talking. They're all things that have changed. They're not who define him anymore, if you could say. They're the main ones. I think there would be a few little things, like silly things, like how he writes, how he pronounces certain things. It's all changed, and it's all just things that where the brain's had to rebuild itself.
Yeah.
They're the things that have been affected and been changed by it.
Right.
So it's mostly just little things, but yeah, they are the big ones. It's his laugh, smile, talking.
That's all changed. That's amazing. So did it feel like you were getting to know somebody different slightly?
Yeah, it did, yeah. Although it's little things that change, they make big things, don't they? Like his sense of humour and everything, like they're things I miss, they've changed. So it is, you're right, it's like getting to know a new person.
And so how has his sense of humour changed?
We used to have quite a dark sense of humour. Like, I have a very open sense of humour, I like to say. Whereas going back to saying he's like a child again, like his sense of humour is a little bit more simple. It's a bit more like you're telling jokes to, I don't know, like a 12-year-old or a 13-year-old. Like, he finds them hilarious. Whereas before, we would say explicit jokes and things like that, and that's what would make us laugh. So, yeah, little things.
And so do you feel very protective of Michael now?
I find myself, when I go to the pub, I'll meet Michael in the pub sometimes, I find myself all the time just kind of watching out for him. When someone's talking to him, like, I don't make it as I'm like protecting him, but I'll always ask him, oh, who's that you're talking to, or do you know them people over there? I don't know why. I guess it's just because what happened, I don't want anything like that to ever happen again. So I do find myself being a little bit protective, yeah.
Do you feel like he's a bit more vulnerable?
Yeah, I do. Like you said, he doesn't want to go up the seafront late at night because it still plays on his mind. So I guess that in its sense makes him a little bit vulnerable. I wouldn't say he's a target because everybody knows him, knows what happens, but it's hard to explain. But yeah, I would say he's very vulnerable, because it's another thing, is if all it takes would be one more blow and it would all happen again, and it could even be worse. It could be more devastating. So
I also wanted to ask you, because you mentioned how you had been a bit of a bad boy, you thought the police were for you and you came back. Like, did that change, like, with, you know, as a result of this happening, or did that, was that just you growing up?
No. I think I touched on it earlier on. I said about how much one punch could change someone's life, and I never really realised that before. Well, that kind of shook my world, because I did used to have, like, play fights with my friends. I was quite into boxing. And that really changed everything for me, because I used to think, well, you could punch someone, they'll get a bruise and they'll be fine, or something like that. Well, obviously not. It can impact people's lives, and it's not just Mike it's happened to a lot of people. You hear stories about it more and more now. One person gets punched once in a pub or pushed over and they've hit their head. It can change people's lives, and I don't think people need to realise how much damage one punch can cause.
Oh, wow, Claire, what a story. And, you know, such a good point to end on, the point made by Robert that one punch can cause all of this. It's,
yeah,
you know, a really awful way for him to realise this. But, you know, it's a salutary reminder for all of us, isn't it?
Definitely. Yeah, it was interesting that almost Michael's previous disability, his hip problem that had been caused by the need to, I think, remove his hip when he was 14 years old.
Yeah, it sounded serious.
Yeah, he'd had like a serious infection in there, which I think meant he was vulnerable, possibly singled out by this guy because he had a noticeable limp and he's definitely not as steady on his pins. And so one punch and he fell to the ground, and it was the impact of his head hitting the pavement that caused that horrific damage.
Yeah, that was kind of what was quite shocking, that it's not always the punch itself, is it? It can be the punch then followed by hitting your head and having that additional injury.
Exactly.
That was,
yeah, it's the knocking to the ground, isn't it?
Yeah, it can be, yeah.
Yeah, so you can't always tell the effects that one punch will have.
Yeah, and of course then for Mike, you know, he's written off from working and from driving all at the age of 27.
So, yeah.
But I have to say, you know, he was so keen to carry on contributing, and I know his volunteering at Headway is, you know, a really, really important part of his week, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Say a bit about Headway, maybe.
Yeah, Headway is a national brain injury charity that promotes life after brain injury. And luckily for Michael, there was a local group to him.
But there are other groups around the country, aren't
all over
there?
The country, yeah. And I found it really interesting how he has been relearning his thought processes. It's not something we totally included in there, but he's learning to regulate how much he does at a time so his brain doesn't become overheated, as he sort of said.
Mm.
And he's being able to pass that on to now other people at the at the centre.
Yeah, that's right.
Just telling them to sort of like, okay, do a few minutes work and then now stop for a little while and then do a bit more. So I think he gets a lot from doing that.
Yeah, I think he does. And actually after the interview, just as we were kind of packing up, I know he said that he'd been told he wouldn't be able to work again, but he also told us a bit about his consultant, didn't he? And
yeah,
it's the same guy that was brought in to operate on Michael Schumacher, so I think it's fair to say he probably got
somebody
at the top
there.
Of their game.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's the joy of Adam Brooks, and they apparently had flown Schumacher into Adam Brooks to see this particular consultant.
Yeah,
so,
and for his family, immensely
that must
reassuring.
Have been, yeah, exactly. A reassuring endorsement for his doctor there. Yes, his mum mentioned about Schumacher, didn't she? Because she was present for the whole interview. I had my back to her, but Susie, you saw that she was pretty upset, wasn't she?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was very moving for her to, you know, to sit there and listen to her two sons talking about this, you know, talking so openly about something that has been a massive event for the whole family, really.
Yeah, definitely. And they both have this way of saying things that really kind of would touch any mum's heart, I think.
Yeah, I think they were kind of remarkably candid and honest about the whole thing. I know that there are some really good films actually on the Headway website, so could we if we just put the link to that in the show notes, and you can have a look at how brain injuries have affected people and their families.
Yeah, they're brilliant little videos.
Yeah,
videos. Do you see my old, we sort of still use videos, don't we, as
yeah
a
we still talk
okay?
about videos. Yeah.
Yes, obviously Mike's mum now has him living at home, and I didn't get the impression that he'd probably be moving out like too soon. Mm. She mentioned how many of his friends are married and have children now. And as Mike is 33, I suppose, you know, that's a completely normal thing. And I think that's often quite upsetting, particularly for a mum or, you know, close relatives. You sort of like the difference suddenly, you know, between what your child's doing and what people, you know, his peers are doing, kind of thing. Like,
yeah. And that can sort of crop up at different stages, can't it? There's always that reminder of how your child's life has taken a different course.
So totally.
I wouldn't be surprised if that crops up, you know, at different stages. Just kind of pausing for a moment, we always like to have a podcast recommendation, don't we?
Yeah.
So we've got one this week. Do you want to tell us about
Dear Joan and Jerrica is this week's recommendation. It's comedy genius. Two women who are really antagonistic agony aunts, I would say. They read out a problem and then come up with generally pretty awful solutions. It's just very funny. And this is a recommendation that was passed on to us, and we were advised to go in at episode 8, which is what we've done. And it's hilarious. So yeah, kind of try that one out. And I'm sure that some of the others are very funny as well. But
and we've just been listening to some, haven't we? And I think it's rare to find something that makes you absolutely...
Yeah, like, we were like properly laughing out loud. I think, what was it, a busy vagina or something that made me laugh? Anyway, yeah, it's very funny.
Okay, so I'm not quite sure how we segue smoothly from a busy vagina back into the backstory, but let's go back to just kind of thinking about Michael and Robert. And I was really touched by just the relationship between them. I thought that was quite remarkable.
Yeah, and when we did the interview, I didn't actually realise until afterwards that there's a 10-year age gap between them.
Yeah, that was surprising. Yeah, I didn't clock that.
So when they talked about reversing roles, and now Robert is the older brother, even though he's the younger one, it must have felt like such a huge switch, actually. Like,
yeah,
because
I mean, yeah, for Robert,
he'd been much younger brother. You know,
yeah, you imagine growing up and, you know, your older brother being 10 years older. He must have seemed like, you know, a bit like a god to Robert when he was growing up.
And they both to appear to have sort of accept this change really naturally, don't they? Like, Robert has taken on a caring older brother role, and Michael is just, you know, naturally more vulnerable and does now seem younger in his entire demeanor, really.
But there's such fondness between the two of them,
wasn't there? They really do, and they seem to get on so well.
I thought one change though that was very poignant was when Robert was talking about how Mike's sense of humor had changed, because you know, he kind of described how they used to have a very similar sense of humour, and now Mike's is, you know, maybe a bit more sort of straightforward.
I think he said simple. Yeah. Like, and just sort of, I think he probably, he has like, just like finds kind of very straight jokes quite funny, and like probably toilet humour, whatever, I don't know. But they obviously had like a real sort of shared humour before. Like,
yeah, on quite a different level. So,
so the accent... I mean, the accident happened like 6 years ago, which puts Robert at 17 when the accident happened.
Yeah.
And so I sort of suspect that he's had to grow up a lot, don't you? Like, kind of.
Yeah, I think so. And then he had to
move out to give Michael some space. So, but I love the way that Michael said that. No, so Robert said that Michael was nicer in every way now, didn't he? And, you know, what a positive from such a like crap situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, just to go back to Robert's final point, you know, just that reminder that one punch can kill, you know, it has such the potential for such devastating consequences.
Yeah, totally. I'm going to be adding that to the list of the many warnings that I'll be chanting to my children as they reach their teenage years.
So what other
oh my god,
what are your top warnings?
Consent, like, okay, yeah, always thinking about that, how I've got to mention that to the kids. And like driving, not drink driving.
And not getting into a car.
But it's all those things that kind of, and you sort of run through them and you're thinking, he's only five, so I can't really mention it yet. So like, just keep remembering them.
And you know why you do it? Because you look back at your own teenage years and you think of the horrendous scrapes that you nearly got yourself into.
And you just feel like you want to warn them, but obviously it's still going to happen. Anyway, so next week we've got Vicky Cockerell, haven't we, Susie? Tell us a bit about her.
So Vicky is somebody that I went to interview, and she, when she had her first baby, things didn't go according to plan, and her baby ended up spending time in intensive care. So she talks to us about that experience that had a huge impact on her life. Really moving story.
Fantastic. Here's a clip.
70% of NICU parents will have some form of mental health develop, whether that be, you know, depression, anxiety, and it might not be at the time. You're then left after having that horrendous journey, sitting at home with your baby, with no one to speak to, no one to, because it doesn't end when your baby comes home.
So please subscribe so the programmes automatically drop in ready for you to listen to us next week. It's entirely free. All we ask in return is that you recommend us, rate us on Apple Podcasts and tell your mates about us.
We are The Backstory Podcast on Facebook and Instagram, at The Backstory Pod on Twitter. If you're searching for The Backstory on Apple Podcasts or another directory, then look for The Backstory and you'll see our names, Claire Mutimer and Susie Coulson. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.